A unique new photo feature on the next iPhone, a new app for travel geeks. Costco goes digital. Plus, we're answering your pressing tech questions. What is going on? I'm Rich DeMuro. This is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the stuff I think you should know about happening in the tech world. Plus, I'm answering your tech questions. Joining me is producer Megan. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I am good. It has been a good week. How has your week been so far?
My week's been good. It's been busy. It's gone by so fast.
Also. Megan goes through two phases of life. She goes through just getting done with vacation and then getting ready to go back on vacation. So you're going back out of town again already, aren't you? Where are you going now?
I'm going to Hawaii.
But that's not, this is not this weekend. It's next weekend.
No, next week.
Okay. Did I just reveal a surprise that
no
one, okay. Well, I saw you post on Instagram, like getting Hawaii ready.
Yeah,
so I figured it, like the secret was out.
Days.
Although you didn't say where you were going.
Right. Kauai.
That could have been a secret. Oh, not a secret. Okay.
I mean,
you clearly, you're just an open book. You don't care.
If you click the post, it takes you to Kauai from the last time I was there.
See, Instagram is so tricky with all these like weird little, like nothing is apparent. Like what? Like I didn't realize you can click the post.
Yeah.
You know, anyway.
It's okay.
So why listen to a show like this, Megan?
To learn about tech and how to, you know, make it through the world today.
Yes. So let me give you an example of why you're just the average person. You're sitting there, you're like, Rich, all this tech stuff, it baffles me. I don't get it. How does it affect me? Big deal. Come on. All this stuff you talk about, I don't really understand. But here's why you listen to a show like this. Because number one, I am breaking it down in a way that you can understand. We don't talk about stuff that doesn't really apply to the average person. We're talking about stuff that affects you, the apps you can use, the everyday decisions you're making, whether you want to get a Fire TV or a Roku or Chromecast. These are the kind of things that we discuss on a weekly basis so that when you it comes time for you to make that decision, you remember, oh yeah, Rich did mention that the Chromecast doesn't have that feature or the Roku does that, but the Amazon doesn't. So you just have this thing. I'm not saying this is an end-all for every decision you ever have to make, but it just gives you that basis of knowledge, right? So an example, had a colleague come up to me here at work, and she comes up to me with her brand new cell phone, and she says, hey, Rich, is this a good phone that I got? It's from Verizon. I look at it. I said, oh, that's the Pixel. That's a fantastic phone. But why'd you go with the original Pixel? She's like, what do you mean original? I'm like, that's the first Pixel that ever came out. By the way, back in 2016. You're talking a phone that's 3 years old, right? So she said, I don't know. That's the one that they said was like the best one. And I said, well, they just came out with, I said, how much did you pay for this? Did you get, you obviously got it for free. She goes, no, it was like $600. Wait, what? Hold on. So now you bought a phone that's this old, plus you paid this much money. And I did, you know, just wanted to make sure. I confirmed, you know, I was like, I noticed the phone from the way it looked that it was a Pixel, but I just wanted to confirm because it's been a while since I played with the original Pixel. So I looked at it. I said, okay. And it was still nice. The software was still fresh and everything. But I said to her, you know that Google just came out with two new Pixels that, by the way, are better than this phone and cheaper.
Yeah.
And Verizon sells them. So why would you not get that? And I wasn't yelling at her, but I was explaining. I wanted to know.
Everyone heard you yelling.
Yeah. I was just very curious what happened in this transaction at the Verizon store.
Yeah.
Why a salesperson would lead her to a phone that is 3 years old versus one that came out 2 months ago. You remember we went to the Google event and I featured those phones, the Pixel 3A and the Pixel 3A XL. So I told her the differences. I said, well, here's the difference. The Pixel 3A, which is a phone that sells for $399 unlocked, which is a smaller size. She complained that she got the XL, which was kind of big for her hands. And I said, well, the Pixel 3A is even smaller, so it'd be even easier in your hands too.
Yeah.
So all these things added up to, I said, you know what? I think you got to go back to the store. She goes back to the store, ask her today. And I said, did you get your new phone? She said, oh yeah, they had to order it. So I said, did you ask them why they tried to sell you a phone that was 3 years old? And she said they basically ran around that and kind of gave her the runaround. And at the end of the day, I think what it came down to is that the Pixel 3A was sold out at that location.
Okay.
And they didn't feel like going through the trouble of ordering her a device. Maybe they get more commission on a phone that's in-house. And plus, it's an older phone, so they make more on it.
Yeah, but I'm confused if it's 3 years old. I mean, the phone itself is not, but if it's right. a three-year-old well, it model.
Might be. It might be 3 years old. It could have been sitting there for 3 years.
Yeah. Why is it $600? Why hasn't it gone that's down? What did it start at? Like, did it, that yeah, means it started at like 900?
Yeah, it probably started at like okay. probably closer to 800, maybe something but like that. I'm not really sure. So I don't remember what the price of that phone was. But the reality is, this is why you listen to a show like this. Because yeah. in your mind, you might have a little bit of a memory of Rich talking about a new Pixel phone. You may not remember the model number. You may not remember the details, but you said, Rich just talked about a brand new Pixel phone a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, and I remember him saying it was less expensive.
Right.
Just those two keywords in your head alone should be enough to make you realize, hold on, why am I going for a phone that's 3 years old when I do remember this guy talking about a phone that's newer and better and cheaper? And it's just that kind of knowledge base that you build by listening to a show like this that does help you out in real life. So yeah. I just figured I'd share that story because I thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah. And they can always, if they remember that you talked about it, but they don't remember what week, they can go to ktla.com and they can search Pixel and it'll come up. Because we post our show to ktla.com.
Yeah, we post the show to ktla.com. There's a great website called listennotes.com, mm-hmm. which you can search for basically a topic in any podcast, including ours. There is my website, richontech.tv. So anyway, there's lots of ways, yeah. but remember a keyword or two, and it will definitely help you. So.
Oh, we're going to start with a question?
Yeah.
Okay, so this first question comes from Deb Pollock. And she asks, do you know of a digital smart calendar that you write on that will sync with your calendar on your phone? I know there are notebooks that do that. Thank you in advance.
This is a tricky one because I don't think that there's something exactly what she's talking about. Like, I don't think there's like a perfect product for this.
Right.
But I did a little research, and have you ever heard of Moleskine? These are like these little notebooks that people carry around.
Yeah, I have.
So I've been a big fan of these things for a while.
But are they digital?
Well, that's the thing. Okay. So there was two angles I was looking at here. So one, I don't know if you remember in China, we saw that device that looked like a tablet. It was almost like an e-ink display that you drew on.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I can't remember what the name of it is, but I remember it being really cool. And it was like pen and paper. It was like almost like a legal pad. But it was digital and you can type on it. I don't think that would do what she's looking for. Because I think what she wants to do is actually write something in a calendar digitally and then the event carries over to her phone.
Right.
And I'm not sure that there's a really good solution for that. So the closest thing I found is from Moleskine. They have something called the Smart Writing System. And what this is one of their notebooks, and it says that it bridges the analog and the digital. So you can write in their little notebook, and you know, you get smart writing set, and it looks like whatever you're writing in the notebook shows up in your phone on their app as well.
I don't think
this is perfect. And it's also quite expensive because you have to buy the special notebooks, you have to buy the special software, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's probably the closest you're going to get to a solution like this. Maybe if you're listening and you have something that works for this, I would think that something like the Samsung Note would work for this because I do know that they convert handwriting into digital. On that device, you could probably use your handwriting to write into the calendar and then that will convert into text. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the other solution, but that requires getting a whole new phone and adopting a system. But they are coming out with a new Note on August 7th. So if you want to wait to see if that's the case or if that's going to work for you, that probably is your best bet. So check out Moleskine as well. But if you have a solution, email me for sure. So switching gears from Samsung to Apple. Apple is going to release their new iPhones later in September. We already know that. But of course, now the rumors are trickling out, the speculation on what this phone is going to have. So there's been a lot of rumors that they're going to switch over from the Lightning port, which is what they have now, to something called USB-C, which is what's on the iPad Pro. Remember when we went to the event in New York City that they changed the... Or did you not go to that? Was that before your time?
I think that was before your time. Was this Apple?
This was Apple. They did an event in Brooklyn where they launched their new iPad Pro. And on the bottom...
This was right before I started.
On the bottom, they had USB-C, which is what all the Androids use, which is kind of the standard connector these days. It's right here on the side of my laptop and on your new laptop. Mm-hmm. But everyone thought, okay, well, now they're doing it on the iPad. They'll do it on the iPhone as well. Doesn't seem to be the case. So according to the latest rumors, they're still going to stick with Lightning. I think that's smart for now. I know everyone wants like this changeover, but it's kind of a big deal to switch all your stuff, especially if you're in an iPhone world.
Yeah.
you know, I think it'll be fine because USB-C is everywhere. But if you don't have other things, you're not really caring too much. Like if you just have an iPhone, you charge with your cable you have. You don't want to change that cable right now.
Yeah.
Now, if you're like me and you have a bunch of different things, Android, iPhone, tablet, you know, computer that use USB-C, doesn't matter. I'd rather have one device and one connector for every device, I'd rather, I should say. So that's one thing. The other thing that's going away is the 3D Touch. Have you ever used that on your phone? So
no, 3D
Touch.
8 Plus doesn't have it, right?
It should, yeah. Press hard on an icon, like on Safari. Press hard.
Okay.
And it doesn't do anything, let me see. So let's see if we press. Yeah. See how you press hard and it brings up those little menus?
Yes.
So that's called 3D Touch. And clearly, since you didn't know about it, there's a billion other people that don't know about it either.
Right.
So they're getting rid of that. And what they're doing is something called Haptic Touch. And I was testing this out on the, I'm writing my book for iOS 13 right now. And I was testing out Haptic Touch yesterday. The way it works on the new iPhone is really weird because now when you press and hold an app on your screen like this, you no longer get the wobbly option.
Oh, weird.
It now gives you this. It now gives you, how do you say done? It now gives you this little hard press menu along with an option to rearrange icons. So it's like one extra step now to rearrange your icons. So anyway, that's changing in the new iPhone. And then the camera is the big story. There's going to be three cameras on the back of the new iPhone, at least the upper models, you know, the top models, maybe all three. But the extra space is going to have a wide angle lens. And we saw this with the Samsung Galaxy S10. It had a wide angle lens, which is amazing. I love having the wide angle lens because you can get more creative with your pictures. It's really fun, especially if you're traveling. There's a big mountain or, you know, big building that you want to fit in there.
Yeah.
So, and you just, they just look unique because you have this nice wide angle. If you're a realtor, that's a great use of it, taking pictures of inside people's homes where you want to get the whole room captured. So the way that, of course, Apple likes to one-up things, so they're not only going to have this wide-angle lens, apparently, but according to Bloomberg, they're going to have a new feature that utilizes it called Smart Frame. And so when you take your regular picture, the iPhone will take your regular picture. Let's say I take a picture of you. But it's also going to take a wide-angle picture around you. So later on, let's say that I had, I noticed later on that I wanted to include a little bit more of something to the left of you or to the right of you.
Yeah.
Now I can use that wide angle to kind of see the whole canvas.
And you can like crop it.
Exactly. Recrop.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of fun and it's a smart idea
that
and
is cool.
And it's interesting. Now, according to this Bloomberg article, the extra data is going to be thrown away after a certain period of time. Because you could imagine that in some pictures, when you take a wider angle that you're not really thinking of, there might be something in that picture that you didn't think of. And I'll just give an example. Let's say I take a picture of Megan and there's a wine glass next to you, right? And in the picture that I frame up, that wine glass isn't in there.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden when
at
I go
at work.
Yeah, at work. And when I go to the bigger picture, it's like there's the wine glass. It's like, ooh, maybe you don't want someone seeing that. So they're gonna automatically throw away the extra data after a certain amount of time, which is
so it's two pictures? Or is it one?
It kind of reminds me of like the live picture.
Yeah,
so
like, I was going to say it's like live.
Yeah, you won't see it unless you go to look at it.
Okay, got it.
But if you flip through someone's camera roll and you kind of look at all the larger pictures, you're like, oh, interesting. Like, it's kind of like that Instagram versus reality. It's like the Instagram is like perfectly posed, but like when you go to the wide shot, it's like you just see like it's a mess behind them
or
like light cables and stuff. So anyway, kind of fun.
Good stuff. Okay, our next question comes from Peter Garcia. Google Assistant or Alexa? Hey, Rich and family, wondering if you can help. I'm a big Apple products fan. My dogs are even called Mac and Apple. My question is, what would be more friendly to my Apple ecosystem between Alexa and Google Assistant? Calendars, maps, contacts, controlling other devices, etc. I know what Siri is behind on this front. I also realize I should have asked this before Prime Day to take advantage of the sales. My mistake. Anyway, hope you can help. And my wife and I are big fans watching you on KTLA.
Well, thank you.
Peter.
So this is the million-dollar question. I'm in my house, I am all in on Google. And I think that Google has done a fantastic job of the smart home. I mean, I think they're doing a really good job at controlling stuff. The thing that I've noticed between Alexa and Google is that Google seems to understand my commands way better than Alexa. Mm-hmm. So when I had Alexa set up, I'd say, can you change the lights to green in the living room? Mm-hmm. Don't know why you'd want that. But if you did, it would be like, sorry, we don't see the living room lights. You have nothing named living room lights, because I call them living room dual lights or something. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It needs the exact way you've named things to like work properly. Whereas with Google, on the other hand, if I'm in my kitchen and I say turn on the kitchen lights, or if I just say turn on the lights, it will turn on just the kitchen lights, because it's smart enough to know that that Google Home is in your kitchen. You're in your kitchen. It's assuming you just want the kitchen lights on. It's that smart. So that's why I would say go towards the Google stuff. But Peter, you're saying you want this to work with your iPhone and your iPhone ecosystem. And I feel like, and I don't know this to be certain, but I feel like the Alexa products might work a little bit better with Apple, mm-hmm. because they have their own app that works on the iPhone, and you can import your contacts. I assume you can put your calendar in there. Whereas with Google, it's much more like it kind of knows you're using Google products and it gets all the data from your Google products. So in this case, I would probably lean towards the Amazon side of things. Mm-hmm. And it's a problem that we're all facing right now. And that's that none of these products really play nicely with each other. So if you have an iPhone, it's like you're using Siri all day at work. And then when you get home, you've got to remember what the Alexa or Google commands are.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If you're using Alexa at home, and by the way, I've probably just activated everyone's device, and I apologize for that like 1,000 times. But if you're using A at home, and then you have an Android phone, now you're using Google commands there. So it's like this whole big thing.
Yeah.
But if you have an Android phone, maybe you went with Google anyway at home because you had Android. So I think that's the kind of the differences I would see in the two products.
Yeah. Do you think Apple's going to come out with their own smart?
They are. They have the HomePod, which works, and they have HomeKit, and they have Siri, which works. But the problem is they have not taken the home in as big of a way as these other two companies have. Mm-hmm. So right now, when it comes to home automation and smart home, you've got Google and you've got Alexa. It's a two-horse race.
Yeah.
Siri's there and HomeKit is there, but the amount of products you can get that work with it are just, it's a blip on the radar. Mm-hmm. And that's why most people don't consider it, because they're looking at all the stuff they want, the cameras and all this stuff, and it's just not really available in a big way through Apple.
Yeah.
Apple's trying to change that, and they're doing a lot of cool stuff. One of the things they announced with iOS 13 and HomeKit is that if you want to offer a smart home camera with Apple, they will give you, it's like free iCloud storage for your clips. So for like, they require like a certain amount of time. So basically they're gonna challenge these two incumbents based on like some of the services you get out of them, like privacy, number one, and also like free storage. Like right now, if you buy a Ring camera or a Nest camera, mm-hmm. you're not getting any free storage with those cameras.
You have to buy that.
And that costs money every year. Wise camera, that's a $20 camera. They do give you storage for free. The Amazon Cloud Cam, they do give you some storage for free for 14 days. So Apple is really going to push these companies, which is good. It's a little bit more competitive that way.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk about the Galaxy Fold from Samsung. This is the phone that was a complete failure at launch. Remember, this was the phone that they sent to a couple of journalists, not myself included, which I still feel like that's why this whole thing failed, because they never sent it to me.
That's why.
That's what they get for cutting me out.
That's what happens when you don't let Rich try the phone.
So a bunch of these reporters got the phone. They immediately had problems with the screen. And this is their $2,000 Galaxy Fold smartphone, which looks like two phones folded up like almost like a taco, you know, like a...
A taco phone.
So Samsung took it. They did not launch the phone. They said, we're going to go back to the drawing board. We're going to evaluate this device. And finally, now they're saying they figured it out. So here's what they've done. The top protective layer of the display, which a lot of reporters peeled off by accident, they're making it very apparent that you don't peel that off. So that's number one. Then some other reporters had problems with little crumbs and things getting behind the screen and ruining the screen because it got in through the hinge. So they said that they're going to reinforce the device so that you can't get external particles under the screen. And the way they're doing that is they're putting extra top and bottom hinges, like protection caps on the hinges, and then additional metal layers underneath the display. And then they also made the space between the hinge and the body reduced. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not an engineer, but I don't know how you, when this phone was supposed to launch, how do you have a million phones sitting in a warehouse, do all these changes, and now you have to retrofit these phones? I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems like I don't want this thing.
I feel like it's just not going to go well. Like
especially for $2,000.
And if they run into more issues.
Oh, gosh.
Then it's
game
just
over.
Like, it's a little bit embarrassing.
That would be really bad. But Samsung is the king of embarrassment,
like,
because, you know, they already had that first issue with the
exploding
phone.
Yeah.
So I hope that this will be okay, but I don't see anyone purchasing this phone in a big way.
Right.
Because it just seems like you have that phone. Oh, isn't that the one that had all the problems? Like, why would you spend $2,000 on a phone like that?
Exactly.
I could see if they did a fire sale of like $399 just to get it out there and prove that it's amazing. But
yeah, I think they need to lower the price too.
They might. They have not said if the price is going to lower, because don't forget, this phone is now like 6 months past its original date or whatever. So in the lifetime of a phone, it's not worth $1,980 anymore, because the processor and everything inside is kind of lesser, because you know, you've got things getting better.
All right. So this next question comes from your Facebook page, from Vicky Fain. Good afternoon. Hoping this isn't a completely lame question. I'm wanting to get a Fitbit or other similar device to track my steps. My concern is that when I sync it to my phone, my information on my phone is not as secure. Can the manufacturer of these devices track my activity on my phone? Banking, shopping, etc. If yes, is there a way to prevent that from happening? Do you have any recommendations for these devices? And then she says, want you to know how much I appreciate all you do for us olders, as she calls them, get an understanding of all that technology has to offer. Vicky.
So the question is, if she gets a Fitbit, she connects it to her phone, does Fitbit suddenly have access to all of her activity on her phone, including banking and all these other things that she's doing? The short answer is no. Does Fitbit have a better idea of who you are and what you're doing and when you're sleeping and when you're running and when you're walking and where you're going to work and where you're going to play? Yes. So think about it.
Yeah.
There's GPS on a lot of these devices, or if there's not GPS on the Fitbit you get, they sync up to the GPS on your phone. So in that way, Fitbit is getting a very good picture of who you are, what you do, where you go.
Mm-hmm.
Banking, no. They're not getting your banking info as far as I know. What was the other one? Shopping, that's an interesting one, because theoretically, this is just theoretical. I don't know that Fitbit does this, but if you go into a Gap and you have your Fitbit on, they know that GPS, and they know that you linger in that little area that they sync to your GPS. They say, oh, we assume that Vicky went to a Gap yesterday. Now, they could be selling that data. We don't know. They could be collecting that data.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But it's very likely, because you are handing over GPS data to them. So shopping. Now, shopping online, probably not so much. They're not looking at your web browser. They're not doing that kind of stuff. But it's an interesting thought. And I'm glad that you're thinking this way, Vicky, because the more that we do, the more we have to think this way.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the implications of these gadgets that we welcome into our lives?
Right.
And you think about the Google Home in your house that's listening all the time. You think about an Apple Watch. Believe me, the Apple Watch is collecting a lot more data than it's displaying on its screen.
Yeah.
And Apple is looking through that data. I remember one time that, and this is pretty common, but these apps and Apple Watch and things, they can see what you're doing on your watch, how you're using your watch, and how you're scrolling through your watch, and how you're, you know, how do you get to the stopwatch? Do you use Siri, or do you scroll through your apps on the watch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That all goes into their internal reports, and they say, we notice that every single person in America, when they wake up, they start a stopwatch. So let's put a shortcut to a stopwatch on the home screen when they wake up. Let's just put that on there. Those are the kind of things that they think of, and that's just an example.
Okay.
But it's the kind of stuff that, like, you might not think about as a random person, but that developers are thinking about ways of making our lives easier.
Yeah.
Why do you think every night before I go to sleep, my watch tells me what my resting heart rate is? Because it's at the end of the day, and they're saying, like, okay, well, you've had a whole day. Like, here's just kind of some stats that we might think you find interesting. And then this morning when I woke up, it said, here's your walking heart rate, which I thought was interesting. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like all these little things that you just don't think of. But I like that Vicky's thinking that way, because
me too.
You have to.
Well, it's also like how last week with the Face app, and then suddenly there's this backlash, like your giving away all your pictures and all your personal information. Like, it's great that people are actually concerned, because yeah. a couple of years ago, it was a different story.
A couple of years ago, people were downloading that flashlight app that had GPS built in, and you download an app and it says, can we have access to your GPS? And everyone's saying yes. Mm-hmm. Why would you give access to GPS on a flashlight app?
It doesn't need to
know where you are.
Right.
So, but a couple of years ago, that was like the top app, and it was like millions of downloads, and everyone said, yeah. And nowadays, if you got a flashlight app and you download it and it said, we want to access your photo library, you'd be like, what? For what? No,
yeah.
deny.
Right.
And it's also good that the manufacturers, when Android first started out, and maybe Apple was like this a little bit, but when Android first started out, you would just give blanket permission to everything. So if you were an app, you just got, if I needed one thing from you, like your photo library, it would say everything that it needed. It would give like 25 things. You'd be like, sure.
That's so creepy.
So yeah, it is creepy. This is an issue that Nintendo Switch owners have been experiencing, and I've seen it on my kid's Nintendo Switch, and it was really bugging me, because he would hand me his Switch, which he's obsessed with, but I would get it, and I'd try to do something on it, and everything on the screen was just moving without me touching anything. And I'm like, what is going on here? This is like the weirdest thing. And so I said, Justin, that's my brother's name. I said to my son, Parker, I said, look, I'm like, you got to clean your hands before you use this, because, you know, kids and their crumbs and dirty hands and all this stuff. I go, because it's getting all messed up. Like, this thing is either gummed up, or there's like stuff underneath the controller, whatever it is. And he's like, no, it's clean. It's fine. And so I cleaned the whole thing with alcohol, like wiped it down, and still same problem. I thought maybe the screen was messed up. Here's what was happening. It's a problem called the Joy-Con drift. And apparently a lot of people have had this issue where when you're not using the controllers, the screen, the stuff on the screen still moves. Now, people have kind of narrowed it down to it's something with the controller. It's still being, it has phantom movements basically inside of it. Whether that's from use or a defect in manufacturing, nobody's really sure.
Mm-hmm.
So these people have been talking about this on Reddit and online and game forums forever. Nintendo has not really publicly acknowledged this, but there was a lawsuit, I think it was last week, mm-hmm. let's just say a week ago, mm-hmm. recently, depending on when you're listening to this, that said, hey, this is a class action suit. You guys know about this. You got to stop this. Well, now Nintendo is saying, according to a leaked memo that Vice got a hold of, that they will fix this problem for free, even if your Joy-Con controllers are out of warranty. Now, if you're not familiar with what a Nintendo Switch is like, are you? It's got the middle part.
Right.
And it's got the two controllers that snap on the sides.
Uh-huh.
So theoretically, you can just fix the problem by replacing those two controllers with a fresh set. Those controllers are $80. So I'd planned on just buying a new set of controllers for my son for his birthday.
Yeah.
Now maybe I'll just call Nintendo and get them replaced. But I'll probably just buy them because it's easier just to go on Amazon. But
well,
you know,
could you go to like Best Buy, or you'd have to go through
Nintendo? No, I think you have to go through Nintendo. So Nintendo's official statement, according to The Verge, they said, at Nintendo, we take great pride in creating quality products. We're continuously making improvements to them. We are aware of recent reports that some Joy-Con controllers are not responding correctly. We want our consumers to have fun with Nintendo Switch. And if anything falls short of this goal, we always encourage them to visit support.nintendo.com so we can help. Kind of a little cop-out right now.
Yeah.
There's no formal replacement program in place. My suspicion is that that will change, depending on how widespread. Only
well, now
Nintendo
people
knows.
Might be like, oh, like, you know, it's going to start to spread and more people will be aware. And
at least they're aware. Like for me, yeah. I thought it was something my son had done.
Right.
And now I'm seeing this. I'm like, no, and here I am yelling at him every day.
Parker, you're dirty. Gotta wash your hands every time you play video games.
So
classic Rich.
Yeah, classic Rich. So the reality is now the more people that know about this, the more Nintendo might say, okay, fine, we'll replace those for free. Here's a formal program. If you bought one, send them in. Or hopefully not even send them in. Just do a claim online and we'll send you a new pair. For what it's worth, a out of warranty repair is $40, but it's easier to just buy the new pair for $80, I think, for most people, instead of getting the old ones repaired, especially when you don't know what the issue is.
Yeah. All right, so our next question comes from Pam Jacobson. Money sharing apps is the subject. Instead of sending a check monthly, I'm wondering about a safe app to send money directly to my son's bank account. I am technologically challenged and do not do online banking due to my paranoia.
So she wants to send money to her son's bank account, but she doesn't want to do it online.
Right.
Well, there are, I mean, this has been going on forever. You can, I mean, ever since I was in college when I needed like a couple $100 and I'd like beg my dad, I'd be like, please, can you send me money? So, you know, you use something like MoneyGram or Western Union. I mean, those are like the OG. Have you heard of those?
No.
Western Union? So a lot of people use it, but Western Union is like an old school, like it started out as like a telegraph company where you would literally go into a store, verbally say a message, someone would type it out and, you know, or send it somehow over wire to another location in the US and they print it out and send it and give it to you.
Okay.
Now they're using that to transfer money. But again, these are old school ways. They're also going to cost you more money. So MoneyGram, looking at their website, if you do it online, it's $5. Now, if you do it in store, I don't know how much it is. It's probably more than that because you're going in store. So it doesn't, let's see if there's like a, I'm sure there's a price list online. But the reality is, why put yourself through all this trouble?
I'm just confused about a safe app, but she doesn't want to do online banking.
Right. So I don't, those two things, okay, well, she could be saying she doesn't want to sign up for her online banking app, but there are third-party apps. Like you could use like
Zella?
PayPal.
Oh,
or
yeah.
You can use, well, I was going to tell you my favorite is, is Zelle, which is, that to me is the best money transfer protocol out there right now. The reason for that is because it's built into most banks.
Yeah.
So if you go into your app, if you have Bank of America or I'm not sure, is Chase one of them?
I
bet you they're the one that's the holdout.
I know that, yeah, Wells Fargo is with Zelle.
Okay, let's see if Chase is. I bet you they're not. Let's see. Oh, they are. Okay, so Chase is there.
So
give
Zelle's
me a bank.
Like,
give me a bank.
Wells
Fargo.
Wells
that's
Fargo.
On there. Give me another one.
Oh, my gosh. I can't
Bank
think
of America.
Bank of America.
Are they not on there? Oh, there's the... Oh, no, they're on there. Okay, so all the major banks are on there. And plus, if
Zelle.
You're looking through this, look at all these banks. And nobody knows about Zelle because they don't advertise. I don't know what the deal is. But if you go into your banking app, and next time someone says, hey, can you Venmo me? Which I don't Venmo. I don't like Venmo.
Yeah, you
know this,
it.
Right? I'm a hater on Venmo. If they say, can you Venmo me? Just say, hey, will you accept Zelle? A lot of people will say yes. And I just had to pay someone the other day, and they said, you know, we accept Zelle. And they said, no. I said, well, how about PayPal? I'll do PayPal, but not Zelle.
Don't you need
Western
some,
Union.
Like if I use Zelle on my Wells Fargo app, don't I need like your...
Just need my phone number or email address.
Oh, okay.
So, and the first time you do that, let's say you just say, here, just try it. Just send me $100.
Okay.
So just
give
send
me one sec. I'll do 150 just
okay,
cause.
Just to make sure it works. So you send me 150, you type in my email address.
Right.
And then it will send, if I've never used Zelle before...
It just went through.
I'll get a message. Bing, thank you. I'll get a message that says, hey, can you confirm this $150 payment from Megan? And you go into your bank account and you basically confirm the email address and phone number that you want to be associated with Zelle. From now on, when someone Zelles you, that money goes in your account like within minutes. And it's
That's
really,
nice.
Really
slick. You have to wait 2 days with Venmo.
I know. And this is free also.
Yeah.
So it's now here's why people don't like it. Because the big banks came up with Zelle. And so that's why people don't like it, because they don't like the big banks and they just think it's shady. So anyway,
downloading it.
You don't even need to download it. It's in your app. Whatever app you have, like from your bank, it's already in there.
Okay.
So,
I'm going to delete this then.
Yeah, no need to download the app. I mean, you can download the app, but it's literally in your bank's app. So I think you can sign up. Okay, so it's saying, So I think that app that you're looking at is for as if your bank doesn't support it, you can sign up third party.
Oh, perfect.
So either way, you're covered.
So Pam can
I think she should just do Zelle. I think just go with Zelle, and it's built into your bank, so just... Got to sign up for online banking. It's safe. I've been using it for 10 years now. I mean, it's been fine.
That's all I know.
Yeah. DoorDash is changing the way tips work. We talked about this story on air and online. And actually, I talked about it online first. And then because it was so popular, I talked about it on air and on my Facebook page. And it got a lot of people talking about it. So the long of the short of it is that New York Times did an article where one of the reporters went out and tried their hand at being a delivery person for a bunch of different delivery places. And the whole idea of the article was just to see kind of what it was like. Well, inside that article, it came out how the tipping works for DoorDash. And that's the main thing that everyone retweeted about the article. And what the guy says is, here's how it works. You're a DoorDash courier, Megan. You turn on the app. It says, hey, we're going to pay you $7 guaranteed to deliver this salad to this address. And you say, do I accept? Bing, I'll accept. You accept that job. And next thing you know, you get a tip of $5 Bing. From the person that you deliver it to. How much do you think you'd get from DoorDash?
You would get $7.
Okay. So the tip just goes to where?
The tip goes to DoorDash.
Okay. Well, that's the way they did it.
Sorry,
but nobody would think that. Why would you think that? You think they just rip off your tip?
Okay. Sorry. It's because I know the story.
Yeah. You know the story. $12. You're too involved in the story, Megan.
I would think $12.
You would think the average person would think $12 because they guaranteed $7 and someone gave you $5 extra.
Right.
That's not the way it worked.
No.
The way it worked is DoorDash would say, oh, cool. Now we only have to put in $2 because this person gave in $5. So we still pay Megan her $7 that she was guaranteed, but we only had to pay out $2 in that circumstance. Everyone thought that was kind of crazy.
So DoorDash couriers, do they get like some sort of thing that says you got a tip? Or do they just never find out that they got a tip?
I don't know.
Could you imagine how much money?
Yeah, they should, pocketed. Like, it's crazy. Right. That's what's so crazy. So when people heard about this, they just started discussing it online.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to think that's right. And a lot of the other companies don't do it that way.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you, when I was a waiter in New Jersey, the way the law worked there, and this was many years ago.
CPK?
No, this was at a place called On the Border.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever heard of it? It was like a Mexican place. So it was owned by Chili's. I think it's still around. So when I was there, I was paid $2.15 an hour, which was 50% of the minimum wage at the time, which I think was like $5 an hour. New Jersey, clearly, back in the day, was not very good. So I was paid whatever, maybe it was $2.85. Whatever it was $2 and something. Mm-hmm. But the way they got around it is they said, well, you make a certain amount of money in tips every hour that brings your hourly wage up to $5 or $6 or $8 or whatever it was. And I was like, that's weird. So when I got to California and I worked at CBK, when I made whatever it was, minimum wage back then, I think it was $5 or $6 or $7, I couldn't believe that I got that in addition to my tips at CBK, because California is very, you know, they're a little bit more progressive than the rest of the country when it comes to like new laws and stuff. Mm-hmm. New Jersey is too nowadays, but back then, clearly they weren't.
Yeah.
So I thought it was like the most amazing thing back in the day when I got all this money for my base hourly wage, mm-hmm. and I got tips. Well, nowadays, when you think about DoorDash just taking that money, that's not very nice.
Well, but I feel like a lot of these couriers, you know, they do Postmates, they do DoorDash, they do, like, you know, and so they probably know already, I'd rather do Postmates because I'll get my tip.
Absolutely.
Or, like, you don't make as much.
But here's how they get around that on the app side, because don't forget, it's a cat and mouse game with these delivery people, because you think you always see these Uber and Lyft drivers with the little stickers on their car, they're doing both.
Right.
The problem with doing both in any of these situations is that you don't necessarily hit your bonuses by doing both. So the way that like these companies get around it is like with Lyft and Uber, they want you to keep the app open or do a certain amount of drives in an hour, because they know that the average driver who is just doing Uber can do, let's say, 6 pickup and drop offs in an hour. Mm-hmm. But the person who's shifting between both, trying to make the maximum amount of money, you know, being a little sketchy or looking out for themselves, I guess I should say, is not going to hit those targets, so they don't get the bonus. So the way that they entice these people to be loyal is by offering bonuses that, and according to the New York Times article, are kind of tough to hit. But again, they're there.
Right.
So anyway, So the guy who started DoorDash, which I've interviewed, Tony Hsu, a couple years ago, by the way, he said that going forward, we're going to change the DoorDash earnings structure so that it will increase by the exact amount of customer tips on every order. They didn't share specifics, but the fear is now that instead of guaranteeing a minimum of 7, as in our original example, they would now guarantee just a minimum of 4 based on the fact that, oh, we'll assume that people are going to tip. Mm-hmm. So now, two things I learned from this. Number one, always tip in cash.
Yeah.
Even if you're tipping through the app in the future, it still seems like it just seems better to do cash.
Yeah. Because then you know that they're getting that money.
Okay. Let's get to a question quickly. And then I've got one more thing I want to talk about.
Okay. Last question is from Facebook, from Pam Kuhnlein. Wondering what you think the best/safest emails are for personal use.
Ooh. Okay, so I think the best is Gmail. That's a simple one, right?
Yeah, that's what I use too.
Yeah, I mean, that's Gmail is like the best. It's just easy. It works everywhere. I'm talking best on like a average use case space. You know, it's just, you just want email that works and this and that. Safest, I'd say, is something called Proton Mail. And so Proton Mail is totally encrypted. It's made by the Swiss. So you know that they're, I don't know, Swiss just seems sophisticated, right? Like, I don't know anything about that. But
yeah.
I've been to Switzerland, and it was very nice. But they're
safe.
People have bank accounts in Switzerland because it's like, it's like protected or whatever. Uh-huh. So according to their website, the user data, all the servers are located in Switzerland. This means your user data is protected by strict Swiss privacy laws. So Proton Mail is the one that you want to use if you're doing the secure route. So, and it has end-to-end encryption. I don't know why you need it, but you never know. I don't know what Pam
anything?
Does. I'm looking. A basic account is free, but then you probably want to go with the plus. You probably want to try the basic and then switch to plus. Plus is £4 a month, which, whatever the math is, a couple bucks, whatever, $5 a month, who knows, something like that.
Cool.
Let me talk about two apps before we close out the show here. Number one is for travel nerds. It's called Flighty. This is really cool. Did you download it yet? I told you about this.
No, I don't think I did.
Oh my gosh, you have to download this for your flights to Hawaii.
Yes.
So it's a iOS app, only iOS right now, and it's a flight tracking app, and there's a million of them out there, but what I like about this one is that it is all about the data. So you get so much data about your flight, including delays. It has delay predictors. So immediately when you type in your flight number and you kind of put your flights in there, or you can do it automatically if you pay, mm-hmm. but for the average person, this depends. This app is really not for the average person. It's for the person who really likes to fly, is a frequent flyer. So you've got all kinds of alerts on if your flight's going to be delayed. You get all kinds of data on your flight, like what kind of plane you're going to be on, what the history of that is. And it just is really cool. So download it. It's called Flighty, Flighty. Now, there is a 14-day trial, but after that, it is pricey. $9 a month or $50 for the year intro rate. So you have to be serious about flying.
Oh, well, you're going to test it.
I'm going to test it. I might do the $50 for the year just because it's a one-time thing. And I'm doing the 14 days. I've got a couple flights coming up, so I'm going to do that at the beginning of my flights. But I'm going to do that. But just looking at this thing on my phone, there's just so many cool features and it's beautifully designed.
Yeah.
For me, an app when it's, I can tell if an app is going to be good when I launch it for the first time and I see the design and the effort that a developer puts into the beautiful design and the thoughtfulness, I know that's going to be a good app. Because if they're putting that much thought into what the app looks like when you first open it and the homepage and the flow screens and all that stuff, the app is going to be really good. Mm-hmm. And so this one has a ton of data. They're saying the developer, 9to5 Mac, talk to the developer. They say, they say that the Flighty is unfiltered and unbiased. If you think about it, airlines don't really want to tell you the truth because I've been where they don't tell you anything when you're waiting at mm-hmm. the gate and all of a sudden I'll get a trip alert from like TripIt or something saying your flight's delayed. I'm like, wait, why am I getting this from a third party and not the speaker system here or whatever?
Yeah.
And so these are little things that do help when you're traveling.
Yeah.
Because in the case of a flight being delayed or changed or something, if you can be first in line to get like to the next flight that's going mm-hmm. out, that can make all the difference. There might only be 3 seats.
Yeah.
And so if you have the heads up that your current flight is canceled and the next one, everyone's going to be trying to jump on there, those 3 minutes that you get the word before everyone else can really help you get them on the next flight. The other app I want to tell you about, pretty basic, is called the Costco app. But the Costco app has gotten an upgrade. And you can now use it as your digital membership card. Now, Megan, I don't see you as a major Costco person.
What are
person.
You talking about? I love Costco.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't really love Costco till I had kids.
I've always Costco for the hot dogs and the pizza.
Oh, they are good.
They're really good.
$1.50 for a hot dog and a drink is pretty good.
My mom and I like to go.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just random like Costco dates.
We've actually gone and just like walked around and did.
It's great.
Anything.
And my kids love the samples and all that good stuff. But I mean, I've always loved Costco because I love their business model and I love how they do things. But I really started to appreciate them with a family because you buy stuff in bulk and it, like before when I'd buy stuff in bulk, half of it would go bad. Mm-hmm. Now, if you buy stuff in bulk with kids, it's like, you definitely use it all.
Right.
So you can now use your Costco app as your digital membership card, iOS and Android. So no worries there. I was not able to verify mine. I tried to set this up last night. It like, maybe my zip code is wrong or something. Maybe they have my old zip or something. I don't know. So I couldn't successfully set this up, but it's in the app. It all works, and you just have to verify who you are, sign up with a login, all that good stuff. The big question I got on my Facebook page was, will this work with Costco gas? A lot of people like buying gas there. And the answer is not at this time, because you need to swipe your card or insert your card at the pump, which this is a scan.
Right.
So, but for me personally, this is awesome because I don't carry around my Costco card because I don't, it's like one of those places I go once a month, if that. And so I'm not carrying around a card in my wallet just for that.
Right.
Women are a little different because you carry around a larger wallet that you carry in a purse.
Yeah.
But for me, I carry everything in my back pocket. So the less I have, the less thick my wallet is.
Totally.
I don't want, like, some guys don't care. They have like this giant thick wallet. You ever see that?
You should see my dad's wallet. It's like really old, like falls apart whenever he opens it up.
Does it? And like all little things fall out?
Like he has like three new wallets. He
won't
use them. He's just like loves his old.
Guys get very attached to their wallets.
Yeah,
because they kind of like, they get like molded to you. And
right.
That sounds kind of weird, but they kind of, they get broken in. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So
yeah, like a shoe.
But now I used to be a big, like, I only want to get a new wallet like once every 10 years guy. Now I like to get one like almost every year because I just like, you know,
new stuff.
Yeah. I just
being,
you know,
fancy.
Just throw out the old wallet.
Yeah.
With the money inside. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please subscribe if you have not done so already. Just search Rich on Tech in your favorite podcast app. That could be Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and Overcast. Those are a few good ones. And if you have a question that you would like answered on the show, just go to richontech.tv and hit contact up at the top of the page. And don't forget to sign up for my newsletter. That is at richontech.tv as well. Right near that contact button, it says newsletter. Producer Megan, did you enjoy this week's show?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Because I just felt like we had some funny moments.
That's always good.
And that's always important.
Unlike real life or, you know, nothing. We're very serious.
Yeah, nothing's funny.
All right. You can find Megan where on Twitter?
On Twitter, Producer Megan with an H.
And you can find me on Twitter as well. I am at Rich DeMuro. Everywhere else, I am at Rich on Tech. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day. We'll talk to you real soon.